Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Hello everyone, welcome to episode number 3. In this episode, I talk to Todd E. Jones, who is an expert copywriter, and he explains why and how he never runs out of blog post ideas. Let's get started. Hey Todd, how are you?
What's up? I can't be a statue, brother.
You wouldn't want
me to be a statue.
How are you doing today?
I'm not too bad, except for all these people trying to talk to me when I have to get on a, wait till 1 o'clock in the afternoon to start trying to connect with me. And anyway,
disturbing you.
No, you're not disturbing me. They're disturbing me. They're disturbing me, not you. I had this plan, man. It's blocked out.
Okay.
I don't look at it as a podcast interview. I look at it as a chat with my friend Davinder.
Yeah, same here. So I know a lot about you, but I'm sure people who are going to listen this do not. So why don't you give a small introduction about yourself, like what you've been doing for last maybe 10 years and how you progressed to what you're doing now?
You don't have enough time on the show to really talk about the last 10 years.
That's why I give you a limit of 5 minutes.
I think I've just figured out the last couple of years that I'm a storyteller. Mm-hmm. Now, I may not be, the best storyteller. I may not do it the way some people do it, but I do it the way I do it. And I look back, I had a podcast last fall with my friend Mandy, and we talked about that a little bit. And it kind of runs in my family. I mean, I see it even in my brother, who's an auditor, right? He's not even – he works with numbers all day, but he's still a storyteller. Both my grandparents did it. My dad told stories. How it is when you get together with families, you tell stories about stuff that happened. And I guess at my, core, I'm a storyteller. But, I started playing around with WordPress probably about 10, 11 years ago, and did some projects here and there. I had a job working for a bookstore back then. So I kind of got into that system a little bit. And then I moved to Arkansas, back into the home state, and got a job at a call center. But in the meantime, continued to do some freelance projects. And I took the leap. And
when you say freelance project, you did website building or?
WordPress websites. Yeah, basically. Okay. I built a website for I kind of stuck to WordPress because that's what I knew. Before I tinkered with WordPress, I played around with different platforms. I think the first platform I played around with for websites was Front Page Express.
Yeah.
Remember that? Bundled with Internet Explorer 4. And
that was the only tool to make automated website to whatever automation that was possible during those days. Yeah.
And then I got a copy of something called Namo Web Editor out of Japan. It was kind of the poor man's Dreamweaver. About $100 off the shelf versus $450 or whatever. And I use that to build some sites. And
how did you get into from building websites to writing copy? Like, how did you discover that side of your passion?
Well, like most website designers, builders, when you launch a website, pretty much the number one thing that slows you down is content. And I reckon I can't really remember specifics, but I'm sure along the way I assisted with content just to get it launched, even though the project wasn't very much in terms of price. But, I learned that I could play around with words a little bit better than most people. And I launched into the WordPress freelancing full-time in 13, building sites, and I realized that, blogging was becoming more of a serious part of the web industry. Google-like sites with blogs, those kind of things were really popular back then. And so I started helping people or trying to help people. You know, you needed to have a blog, and most people, you know, aren't able to carry that forward. But I started writing some blog posts for myself, and then I did a few guest posts here and there. And you know, as I went, and I got a job with it was a freelance job with a local agency, and I did everything just about that you could do for them, from writing a blog post to project managing to doing what they called SEO, is essentially a lot of content marketing. I did web development. I did all that. And I realized that my area of strength was the content side.
So as of now, are you working with direct clients, or are you also working with some company agency with regard to your content writing tasks?
I am working right now with direct clients. I think we're going to talk about the move from Graphics Cat Media to CopyFlat. And part of that is looking to become a partner with WordPress agencies to, you know, help them launch content, help them to build the content that will help them generate leads, and also help their clients develop their core message. Those three things are pretty, pretty big need.
Yeah, I was coming to that because you had your main website as Graphics Cat Media, and you recently launched another site called CopyFlat. So basically you are doing a rebrand or a shift from Graphics Cat Media as your main hub of you as a person offering content writing services to CopyFlat. So why did you went for this rebrand? Is that a part of your content upgrade strategy or something else?
That's definitely part of it. I think Graphics Cat Media, that name came to me probably 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I have no idea why it came to me. And, you know, you kind of get, huh?
We all have those weird names, domain names.
And I thought it was clever and cool and those kind of things. And I like cats.
You do have a cat, right?
No. I have one now, and I had one then. Cool. No, it was a big deal. But it doesn't make sense. It's hard to spell. It's hard to remember. It breaks all those, you know, brand name criteria, if you will.
Conventions.
Yeah. And, I don't know you have to be perfect on that stuff, but. And then the idea of CopyFlat came to me, and I think somewhat after reading for years the blog posts that Copy Blogger and Copy Hackers, so I thought CopyFlat, and I really didn't know what I was going to do with that, and it seems like somebody encouraged me to launch a brand around that. So then I watched Kim go through some of her transition, and I said, well, this year I'm going to do it. This is what I'm going to do. Life was kind of slow for me the first year with some health issues. And so it took a little while to get it off the ground, so to speak. But in the meantime, I had this plan, even though it was slow to launch, if you will. I kept, because we're in these Facebook groups, and I kept saying, I'm working on this. I kind of built a little bit of, I don't know, buzz, not a lot of buzz, but a little bit of buzz. And so, I had some influencers in my space.
How has been the response? Like, it's just been like two or three months since you launched it. So
yeah. And so, I really was hoping that 100 people would contact me the first day to do work, but that's not what happened. But slowly it's began to, last time I looked at numbers, I was actually surprised the number of people who were coming. It's like, now I just need to convert some of these people. Through the email and so forth. But, I think even though I launched it, I was still figuring out who I am a little bit, what it is that I want to do with CopyFlat.
Target audience.
I kind of came in the idea with two, and now I've kind of scrapped that. And so I'm really reaching out to WordPress agencies, small WordPress agencies, the Angled Crown kind of, 2, 3, 4 people shop, and the people who, maybe they went through WP Elevation, maybe they went through something else, but they're trying to build sites, not just build a site, but they're trying to build a site that solves a problem for a client and helps them generate business. And to do that, you're going to have quality content. And that's where I would come in.
So let's come to the real thing. Like, you write a lot of content, so writing blog post content is a natural thing to you. But for a lot of people, be it newbies or maybe someone who've been struggling for a few years, getting blog post ideas is very difficult. There's always this scenario. So I stare at a blank screen and have no idea what to write. Now, this is a very common problem. There are a lot of blog posts regarding this, like how you can overcome this. So do you also face this problem? If yes, how have you overcome? Or if someone is facing this problem, what would you advise? Like,
well, first of all, I don't think you ever completely not have that problem. I think there's always, you know, periods of your time, even if you're a regular writer, you know, you run through periods of dry spells and you're looking at the screen and you know, and the thing about writing, I think a lot of people take the wait for inspiration to strike kind of thing. And you really can't do that. In fact, if you think about it with your website, if you're building a site, if you wait for inspiration to strike to build a website for a client who's got a deadline, not going to work out too well.
Yeah.
I think it's true with writing a blog. You kind of have to, sometimes you have to manufacture that. And I think the best way to do that is to build topic ideas. Now, they can be, SEO generated in the sense of keywords or topics about what your audience wants to hear about, those kind of things. You can use certain blog post templates, if you will, the how-to post, that kind of thing, to generate ideas. But the ideal, I would say, get a library of ideas.
Yeah, because if you're writing for yourself on your personal website, then you can take your time and you can decide on things, go on slow. But if you're doing for client projects, then things are different. Like, you have tight deadlines. So let's take an example. Like, there's a wedding planner business and they come to you for content. Say they want 5 or 6 pillar content post. So how would you go about in, you know, researching what kind of posts can be pillar content for them who is a wedding planner targeting only the local market area or the local city center for their clientele?
I would probably take a two-avenue approach. First, I would want to survey, or if they have a list, I'm sure most everybody who sells something has like 10 or 20 questions that everybody asks all the time.
Yep.
I would want to get that list. I want to, 10 to 20 questions. And then you could create blog post topics out of that. And then another side, I would want to research popular keywords for the niche. And then what we do, I think there's different ways of referring to it. I've heard content cluster and spoken hub, but your pillar posts, I'd probably take 4 to 6 of those that are really important and make the absolute best article I can about that particular topic.
That describes your business to the target audience, I guess.
Well, let's just say, how much does a wedding planner cost?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people
that's a question a lot of people don't want to know, and I'm sure, and I'm not looking at the SEO value, but I would think that some variation of that keyword would be pretty high. So I would take that, and I would make the very best post I could on that topic. Now, you might have to, if you're not a great writer, you might have to outsource that to a good writer. That's fine. But you want to make sure that that is the very best post on that topic that you can. Now, you might not be the best, but you want to be one of the best, because what that will eventually do is should get you a ranking for that keyword on the first page. And then you want to take variations of that are connect to that particular post. And you want to link to that post. So how much does it cost for a wedding planner? And maybe you can build some supporting content around it. You know, what questions should I ask for a content planner? What can I expect from a content planner? Some supporting posts, if you will, that link back to that post, that main post. You want that pillar post to be a cornerstone content. That's what Yoast would call it. And you want it to, the gentleman who spoke on Kim's Facebook Live the other day, and I can't recall his name, Brandon or something like that, and he talked about it.
Regarding SEO?
Yeah, and in that particular thing, you want that blog post to be one of the best on the web, because you're going to rank highly for it once you do that. Again, and it's not going to be something you're going to write in 2, 3, 4 hours. You're probably going to spend a minimum of 10, and depending on how much you put into it. So that's why I suggest on that front, if you have the budget to actually hire a writer who is skilled in doing long form content, who can take that topic and turn it into a killer post.
So besides, you know, SEO, keyword search, making pillar content, a lot of people these days says that your brand need to have a story. So does a niche brand like this, like a wedding planner, is there a way to, you know, weave in a story in the content to give it a more personalized touch that appeals to the local audience?
Absolutely. I mean, off the top of my head, the first thing I thought of was a story of a particular client of the wedding planner. So say this person used a wedding planner and tell that story, tell do the whole story arc. You know, there was a problem. We needed a wedding planned and no one had the time. And this person came in and helped us plan this wedding. And, you know, we overcame these obstacles. And as a result, it was the best wedding I could have ever imagined. And, you know, that would be what you might call a case study, but I like to refer to it as a customer story. But that would be one of the first things I would do. And then also you can do interactive content like a video as well. You can do something similar with video if you have the chops or can hire somebody to do that, and more Facebook Live. But that's one area. And then I think to know your target audience is to know their story.
Yeah.
You know?
And besides, you know, digging into keyword research via Google SEO and stuff, where does social media information like things on Facebook, Twitter help in, you know, finalizing the content strategy of specific business requirement in terms of putting in pillar content or even the extended content?
Well, I once called social media word of mouth on steroids. I still stand by that to a degree. It can be word of mouth on steroids, but for instance, let's say you build that story about the lady and her fiance hiring the wedding planner to pull off something that they couldn't do on their own. Or to help them pull off something they couldn't do on their own, and they decide to make a case study, a customer story on that, and then maybe they get her to share a synopsis of that story in a video and use that to attract attention with a link back to the story. That is one way you can use social media. It is a way. I mean, I watched it with my sister-in-law, who is a photographer here in Conway, and you know, she was questioning me about whether or not she should put her pictures up. And I said, you know, it's a digital image. The DPI is really low. If they print it out, they're going to be disappointed. So I said, put it up, put a watermark on it if you want. And now, so what she does, she gets, and I think this is a brilliant strategy, and I think a lot of photographers do this, but she gets what she, I forget what the word she calls them, but usually it's a senior, because she does a lot of senior pictures. So she'll get a senior student in high school, two or three of them, they get a discount on their package to be what she calls a spokesperson. And so they share with all their friends, and they're the models for the year. And in the football annual, she'll have a full page ad, and she'll have those spokespersons' pictures in there, get senior pictures from Amy Jones, et cetera. So she uses that to bring people back to her website to book a session. And I think that's how you have to look at social media. I was thinking about this today on my little walk. And social media, you know, you don't pay the bills on engagement.
Yeah.
You know, I like likes and shares as much as anyone, but you don't pay the bills on engagement.
You need to convert.
Yeah, exactly. And so ultimately, your social media strategy needs to bring people back to where they can purchase your product. Now, it may take some engagement and buzz and so forth, some of those things as a precursor to get to where you get to where the audience trusts what you're doing. For instance, I've got a Beaver Builder course. Well, everybody knows the vendor. He's been sharing stuff for ages. And so, you know, he gets all this engagement on Facebook, and now they're purchasing your course. You know, that's the whole ideal. And salespeople have said for years, and I think it's still true, that it takes from 9 to 11 touches for someone to make a purchase. And
yeah.
Thanks. A bunch of those can be social media.
Thanks for my plug. Now,
well, it's a good example. It really is a good example.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about just the content strategy, say, for a new business, like, there are a lot of moving parts that one needs to consider. Like you just summarized that building even the pillar content, you need to first understand what the business is all about. And then content strategy is not just about writing blog posts. It is also about creating content for the social media platforms of that business. So there are a lot of things you are, besides just writing blog posts, because you also got to write the homepage content, the about page. These are also, in fact, these are more important than just writing blog posts, because when someone lands on the website, first thing they would see is their, you know, their catch line or the headline that you show on the hero section of your website. So what is your workflow of, if like the same example, like a new business and you're building the content strategy, what is your workflow like? From which part you go and, you know, pick and choose your things? Like, first you decide on the pillar content or the homepage content, or you do the SEO keyword research or the social stuff? Like, which workflow you follow?
I think I'm gonna answer that question, but let me start with this. I think one of the reasons people don't get content in time for their web projects, aside from not having a writer on staff or whatever, is they really don't know their core message. They don't know, you know, I sell plumbing supplies or whatever, but they don't know their core message. And you know, you can be successful without that per se, but there's a certain sky limit you're going to hit. So I think if you're getting started with content for a website, whether it's a client's or your own, I think you need to start, personally, I think you need to start with core strategy, the core message of who you are. And that, the homepage and the about page and your number one service or product page. And, if you think about it, if you go back and look in Google Analytics, and I've looked at it many, many times, and I'm sure you have too, the homepage and the about page are almost always number one and two viewed pages.
Yeah.
And most people would not be surprised about the homepage, but they might be surprised about the about page. That's how important the about page is. So I think you start there. I think you get that core messaging down, because it informs everything else. It informs your blog strategy and informs how you do your social media, how you do your email marketing, those kind of things.
So once you dig on things and decide on, like, I have these things that I can cover in the content strategy of specific, say you decide on 10 different topics for 3 or 4 blog posts. So how do you refine and decide which blog post to write out of the shortlisted or the contenders that you've decided that may be relevant to specific business? Do you have some methodology for that as well?
I'll wing it. No, I mean, and sometimes you are just winging it, but I think if you build a content calendar, even if it's a Trello board, like what I do a lot of times, and then you can, you know, sometimes I'm, unfortunately, just deciding a month or week at a time, but building a content calendar, I mean, you have to kind of decide, is this important now, or is this something that can wait till November? You know,
so you build Trello board for every big project.
That's what I'm using these days. It just works for me.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't work for me. I hate Trello. Yeah. I prefer Google Excel sheets. You know.
I know, and to me, there's a lot of similarities, a lot of overlap. But for one thing, I can make a list in Notepad. Like, let's say I've got 10 topics, right? And I've got a Notepad. I can copy and paste that, and it creates 10 cards right there.
Yeah,
it's really kind of cool. But anyway, that's kind of how I look at that. But you know, it's you build a content calendar, you know, you might want to think about themes, or, you know, first year, we're always thinking about renewal and new year and that kind of stuff. Well, does any of that content fit there? I mean, this goes back to the old magazine journalism content calendar thing, really. It's you can match a little bit. You can say, hey, this quarter I want to talk about, you know, lead generation, or this quarter I want to talk about, you know, whatever. And kind of, you just kind of have to put that in place.
Like, once you've decided, like, I'm going to write about these topics for a specific business project, the next part is in which format you're going to deliver specific type of content. Because nowadays there are a lot of blog post formats, like how to post, list posts, curated posts. And besides, other than that, when you are dealing with the full content strategies, there's also slide shares or building videos or infographics. There are so many ways people consume content these days, and everything has to be considered in your content strategy. So how do you decide which part of content will be delivered or displayed in which format for a specific business?
Well, if you're wanting to do slides and videos and those kind of things, those are excellent places to do repurposing of content.
Okay.
So let's say you write a killer blog post on wedding planning. And what is it, you know, how much does the wedding planner cost? Whatever. You could repurpose that into those particular pieces of content and share those at a different time. Some of them are better for social media, you know, anyway. So that's one thing. You know, I haven't gotten this perfect, but I envision in my head, and I haven't even come close to trying, but like a matrix, right? You got all these different blog post types, as you mentioned. Some I think get overused, like the list-based post that gets overused a lot. And people, I think a lot of times list posts are, depending on how they're done, but sometimes they're very shallow. It's sometimes easier to come up with 12, 15 things and write very little about it. And I have seen that. And so it's not very shallow or not very deep. And I like to, if I do that, sometimes I'll go back and try to go deeper on some of the points, which is a good thing. You have mentioned newsjacking, and especially in your industry.
Yeah.
If you're an authority, you're somebody who talks about, like, you know, you talk about Beaver Builder, and you're kind of considered an authority in the Beaver Builder space. And so maybe a new product comes out for Beaver Builder, people really want to hear what Defender has to say about this product. You know, curated collection post, I think some of these shouldn't be used a whole lot, but maybe periodically, especially to kind of break up the monotony of a particular, maybe your type of post. I do like what some people refer to as crowdsourcing posts. Depending on how it's done, I was a part of one recently, earlier this year, and the guy asked a question about routines or whatever. He asked, I think he got 30, 40 people. And so the value, I don't know if the value is real high, but especially if you get some influencers in that. Let's say I was going to do a post on page builders, mm-hmm. I was going to do something where I get influencers, I would probably get something from you and Dave Foy and, Ivica likes MotorPress. I'd probably get something from him, you know, people who use various types of page builders, and maybe, you know, that's one post you could do. But when you do that, I think you really got to think about your industry and your audience and the people who are your customers. Are they interested, you know, in mm-hmm. what you and Dave Foy, those kind of people would say, you know.
Okay.
But there's some value to that, because these influencers will turn around usually mm-hmm. and share it.
Yep. So. Okay, let's talk about the writing style. Like, either you write from scratch, from zero to final, or you write on the go. Because when I started blogging, which was like 8 or 9 years ago, I used to write from start to finish an article, although I didn't use to write like 2000 word article. It was like 300 and 400, but it mm-hmm. was still tiring, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So what writing technique do you prefer, like start to finish or writing on the go and coming back, revisiting the stuff?
Really? I never exactly heard it put that way, but ideally, and this comes down to deadlines and that kind of thing as well, But ideally, you want to write your first draft and really not put too much filter on yourself. And then you want to let it set for, I mean, I just got through looking at that in a, there's a book, and okay, we're talking to people who are interested in writing, right?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to, this book right here, it's called Everybody Writes by Ann Handley.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do content creation, writing on the internet, I highly recommend it. Unfortunately, it's only in hardback. So I asked her about it, if it was going to be paperback. She said they didn't have any plans for it right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and she's the lady over marketing props, if you're familiar with that. You should do a first draft, and you should let it sit. Now, it don't always work out this way, but that's what you should do, especially a piece that maybe you've got a little bit more time. You don't have to turn, like, tomorrow. And you would write it, the first draft, get everything out that you can. Obviously, your first step would probably be outlining as much as you can. So you got to realize outlines are fluid. When you get started, you know, particles sometimes go different directions you expect, but at least this is how it works for me. So you outline somebody, and I want to say it's Brittany Berger, but I can't remember, and she's in Content Creators. I brought her in, actually. I brought her into the fold. But I think she's the one who said she made a content dump. She called it a content dump. Like everything about that particular topic, and then sort through it, make an outline, and then write your first draft. Let it set. Go away for an hour, 2-3 hours, depending on your, and come back and edit. And if you happen to have available to you a copy editor, let that person go through it as well and okay. Then look at it again. So that would be an ideal. I don't like to just do start to finish, especially on a longer post,
because
mm-hmm. it is tiring, as you said, and hard to get a very good quality product.
Okay, let's circle back to content strategy for business owners. Now, business owners are primarily busy with their business. So how can they maximize the use of their limited time to get blog post ideas relevant to their business, besides, of course, hiring a content writer? Because when you deal with a lot of small, like when I do website design and development for a lot of small business owners, they don't really give importance to content writing as a separate bucket for investment. Like they would say, okay, $5,000 for design, $5,000 for development. And you ask for the content. Oh, I'll write it, or my secretary will write it. Don't worry about it. So that's the standard response for a lot of business owners, which ideally should not be, because Google will see the words that you've written on your website. It won't see the design that you've put on your website. So
yeah, and that's something I have said in the past is Google doesn't, you know, really look at images. I mean, it does, but it looks at text. And
yeah,
that's why you have alt text, right?
It doesn't matter whether you are using PeopleBuilder or Elementor. It does not matter to the Google. It only matters like what you are you conveying, what message you are conveying with your words, and to some extent the images that are complementing those words. So what would you say to, or what advice would you give to those business owners who are not ready to invest a third party person or a content writer in their fold, and they want to build their own content strategy without putting too much effort and time? Now that sounds contradictory question, but this is the sad reality when you're dealing with small business owners, especially the newer ones who are just starting out.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to separate content strategy, ongoing content strategy, like the blogs, from the actual content for a website build. Mm-hmm. Those are, in my book, two different things. They're part of the same, like same different parts, two different sides of the same coin, really. So I don't know what to tell somebody who doesn't want to invest in somebody to write their content when they're building a website. I know a lot of web developers deal with it because and content snares popped up and a lot of people are using that. And even still, we had this discussion the other day in their Facebook group, even still people are struggling to get content. I mean, you know, tool's a tool. It's a good tool. It's a necessary tool, but you know, if they don't know what to do with that tool, the client doesn't know what they're doing. You know, and somebody said, at a WordCamp I went to earlier this year, Nathan Ingram, who's out of iThemes training, I think he said, you know, and you get in these situations that a lot of times clients actually need marketing consulting. They don't know they need marketing consulting, but they do. And when you don't, a symptom of not having content or not being able to get content, that is a symptom of them not knowing their marketing message, period. And they need to know that. And it's going to be hard to do anything. But let's talk about ongoing content. If you did manage to get the site up and running, maybe you manage or write the words yourself, whatever, and you want to do blog posts, I would say, first of all, don't put pressure on yourself to write a post every week. Now, if you're able to queue up 10 to get started, that's great. But I would make a slower approach on your duration. So maybe once every week, once every other week, once a month. Mm-hmm. Just
be
make sure.
Be consistent.
Be consistent. Just show up, as Kim says. And also make sure those posts are decent. You know, don't put up something fluff just to have, because it's not about, you know, we the whole SEO thing 10 years ago, less than that really, was, oh, you got to continually put content out because the ping goes to Google and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not so much the case anymore. You got to have quality content. So, because Google's algorithm is incredibly smart compared to what it was 8 years ago. So it's better to be slower and consistent and with more quality than have a lot of quantity, faster and shallow content, if that makes sense. And I would make as many, and you're going to have what I like to call now a workshop for yourself or whatever. And you're going to have to brainstorm and come up with those ideas. Otherwise, every week I got a blog post to write and I don't know what I'm going to write about.
Yeah.
Create that idea bank.
Yep. Now, another important fact is, like, do you want to write for search engines or do you write for your target audience? Now, it's a difficult balance to maintain, because when you're building content for a business client, then you got to have the search engine given more value or more weightage to content you're going to write or the content strategy that you're going to create. Now, if I'm going to write it for my own personal website, then obviously it would be my target audience, which I'm going to target rather than search engine. Obviously you would optimize your content for the search engine by adding meta title and meta description. Those are secondary things, but I'm referring to the bigger picture of the content strategy. Like, how do you balance the requirement for Google search visibility of the content and the vis-a-vis the acceptability or the attractiveness of content to your targeted visitors?
Well, you know, I think to, you know, your question is, do you write for the search engine or do you write for your audience? And I think you can make a good argument that writing for your audience is writing for the search engine, just the way that the search engines have changed. I'm not an expert on search engines, but they have changed so much that they are trying to value content that is written well for actual human beings, which is a good thing for writers now. I think there's still, you need to be cognizant of rich keywords, but, you know, I was struck by something that the gentleman on Kim's Facebook Live said. You know, the more content you have, the more keywords you have, the more Google will pick up. And I think, you know, that's true. That's why websites with more content over the years just seem to do well, because they've got hundreds of posts or more in there and there's keywords in there. Google's just pretty smart about that now. I just think if you focus on the topics that your audience wants to hear about and use the keywords that will appear, you know, you can match keywords to those topics. And I don't mean completely different means. I mean keywords that work, that are like the wedding planner. You know, how much does the wedding planner cost? That's a long tail keyword there. But it's probably a question that's asked regularly in Google, I would imagine. How much does a website cost? That's pretty high value. It's a long-term keyword. You know, you start stacking that, the whole compound interest thing, that take effect. It's not just in your brand, but it also, I think, is something that comes with the content as well. The compound interest, you start to compound that interest
Okay, another anomaly in this regard is like writing long form content or short form content. Now, normally people would say your content should be like 2,000 words with deep, profound meaning to whatever topic you're writing about. But personally, traditionally, I have not written even a single 2,000 word article because I am more into technical things. So technical articles don't stretch beyond 300 or 500 words. So 2,000 is like out of the picture. So how do you justify the ideal saying that your content should be at least 2,000 words to have more visibility or to rank better? Because a technical article of 200 and 300 words would also rank number one if you are targeting or writing the specific thing that is being searched by a visitor.
There's so many things that can be said about this. I would talk about this a little bit. My friend Sophie would say, well, it doesn't always have to be a long form content. It just depends on your audience. And I think she's right. But I will say a lot of times those particular posts that come out about it has to be 6,000 words long or whatever.
Again, there's a like battle between the right the content for audience, content for the search engine. Like again, it's just one small another part of this battle, right?
And my thing, what I've come back, my conclusion here, and I really want to test this a little bit, but I want to say your pillar post should be longer. It doesn't have to be 6,000 or 2,000, but it has to be long enough to be the best article or one of the best articles on the subject. I don't think that a 300 or 400 word post is going to do that. You're probably going to be pushing 1,500 at least. That's just an opinion there. But I think you're going to hit 1,500 to 2,000 at the minimum to get one of those kind of, I would say on high value keywords that you're trying to make pillar posts, make those long form content, do the best you can. And then on those little, what I call supporting articles, you don't have to be 1,500 words. You could probably, but I think if you're doing a business blog, 300 or 400 words is a little short. That is very newsy. I have a news website, not really, it's kind of a lifestyle blog here in Conway, and some of my articles don't make it much past 300 words. I mean, just like there's not anything else to say, you know? I get a press release and I copy and post the press release in and it comes in at 250 words. What can you do, right? So those are newsy articles and those are going to be shorter and that's fine. You talk about news jacking. Well, you get in there and do a little newsy post and it's 300 or 400 words. So what, you know? I would just say that for the ones that you're trying to do pillar posts on, then knock those out of the park. And the rest of them are considered supporting, if that takes pressure off people, maybe.
Yeah, bottom line, you can't please everyone.
No, you can't. And I have watched you write articles at Beaver, at Pro Beaver, and you get lots of comments and traction on those.
And
they're not very long.
And if you compare, like if you compare Pro Beaver Weekly with the standard SEO, conventions, it is a blunder content. Why? Because it's hardly like 250 words with 20 different links, different websites. Some of them being paid links, paid links, but affiliate links, which Google doesn't like. So it's, but then it converts, it gets the right kind of people. So It's a tricky balance. You need to identify what your audience is. If you're targeting people in your niche who are technical, obviously they will. Now, if a person is technical, you can't just make an essay out and you're going to explain something like, do this, and you put that line at the end of 2,000 words article. That person would not read it because that person want to read that go here at the top of the article, right?
Yeah, so I do once in a while. I'll do a kind of a sort of a tutorial post at MainWP. Maybe it's a plugin or whatever, and those are much shorter and not much you can do about it, right? I can probably pour a little bit more into it, but those are not going to be very long, and that's okay because a lot of times I hit posts that are much longer on the Wednesday, so it's a balance. But I wouldn't put pressure on any. I wouldn't want any business owner to put pressure on themselves to produce a 2,000 word post every week. That's just, especially if you're not a writer, that's not gonna, that's just not sustainable. But But I will say this, and I'm working on a post right now based on our conversation the other day, and I started it yesterday, and five elements of a good post or something of that nature. And you need introduction and body and conclusion. So even if your posty part, your meaty part short, make sure you have an introduction and a conclusion. That'll jump the page count up a little bit. You know, if you hit 50 to 100 words on each of those, you know, there's another 100, 200 words. So if you write a 400 word post in the middle and you add the intro and conclusion, it'll push it up to 500 or 600 words. But it's, you know, whatever you do, make sure that you include an intro and conclusion. That's just standard writing.
And I think the bottom line, besides getting confused into 2000 words versus 200 words, I think one should be consistent in producing content. It doesn't matter how long or how short it is. And he or she should produce content relevant to the audience by putting right words in a right message, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you a post that really gets a lot of interest from people is, we've seen some of this recently. Dan Norris put out one a few weeks ago that I shared. But especially people who've been in business a while, people want to hear your thoughts on stuff. Really, it's a thought post, an opinion post. Maybe my thoughts on page builders or whatever. And it's almost a story. It's very narrative. It's like, here's how I did something. People like those kind of posts. Now, whether or not they're overly practical, I don't know, but it's something people will read, especially when you're talking about your experience with something. You know, here's my experience with using Bluehost. You know, I use Bluehost and blah, blah, blah. Here's my experience using Bluehost or something like that. People like those kind of posts. They get hooked into those because they're very narrative driven. And that usually doesn't take a lot of research. That just recall for most of us. So
again, it's coming back to storytelling, you know. Everyone has a different story for us. If you use the same product, I use the same product, but a story will be still different, even though we may be satisfied. We both would be giving like 5 stars to a product, but still why we gave that 5 star and that story related to that would be different. Now, coming to this, let's dive into your toolbox. Like, what tools does Todd uses to power his online business? So, first of all, what are your five favorite tools that power your content creation routine?
Well, that was one I was expecting you to ask because I looked at it on your prep sheet and I wanted to write it down just to make sure I had everything correctly. So
yeah, you don't miss any favorite of yours, right?
Yeah. So, and none of these are affiliates, right? So the first one I mentioned was Notepad. You know, I'm a Windows user, I know Mac has some kind of similar thing, but the thing about the Notepad is just basic. You can do some formatting, but you're not tempted to play with the UI. I just write in Notepad. I just write and try not to do too much editing when I do that. But I can write a certain section of an article or whatever in that before I paste it into my ongoing document. I do like Google Documents as well. A lot, really good for note taking and storing. Like today, you know, we've been talking about the different kinds of posts that you can write. I came across two resources this morning, one from Austin Church and one from the Pro Bloggers folks. One is 43 types and one is 52. I saved them and put them in my Google Documents folder, and I'm building processes out that I can put in my Google Documents folder. And sometimes I just need to put notes for an article in Google Documents. It's a great place to start. I like to work my ongoing document in AirStory, which is by the Joe Weeb and Copy Hackers. Mm-hmm. If you're just blogging, it's free. If you're putting your entire content team on there, that, you know, there's some cost there. But just if as an individual blogger, you can get a free account and use it. And I like it because you can move around quotes, you can move around sections, you can actually put a template in and use that template. And I really get a lot from her Tuesday tutorials because often she shows how she uses AirStory, which is eye-opening. So I like Grammarly to help with editing. I have not purchased ProWriter, I think is what it's called, the one that Ivica talked about the other day. I really like how that looks, and somebody else referenced it today.
Yeah, I think that has a lifetime license something.
Yeah, and he got one somehow. I don't think I saw it, but I may purchase that down the road because
Grammarly, I think, is monthly or yearly.
It's yearly. But I saw another copywriter talk about it as something for real copywriters is how she put it. And I thought, okay. So I'm going to revisit that. And then finally, WordPress.
Good old WordPress.
You wouldn't think about it, but there's so, you know, you can do, I mean, it's the best HTML editor on the planet, really. And, but even when I do web copy for clients, I'm wanting to make sure that I include a meta description for them, a suggested meta description, and meta tag. That's something you'll get from me whenever when you hire me to do that. So I will pop it into a HTML editor inside of WordPress and run the Yoast, try to optimize as best as I can. And I have given the actual HTML copy to people before, but either I can, you know, and it also allows me to format and, that kind of thing. So
I think those are the five that you mentioned. Four of them are my favorite. I don't use ASStory because, hey, I'm not a copywriter, but I would love to know what exactly does ASStory do if you compare it with, say, Google Docs.
There's a lot of similarities. I think they've changed the user interface several months ago where it's more medium like, and okay. Actually I think I'm probably going to be ready for Gutenberg just because of that.
You're the first person I've heard that you're ready for Gutenberg.
I'm not gonna say I'm ready for it. I think the biggest problem
you did Gutenberg, say it.
Yeah, well, I think I may be ready before Gutenberg because of that, but okay. But I'm talking about more from the writing standpoint. I know it's a big change for most people, but the big problem people are going to have with Gutenberg is going backwards and making sure that their builds are compatible with it. And then also their clients being comfortable with it. Those are going to be the two big problems with Gutenberg. But ASStory has that kind of a UI, user interface, where you click and hover over something, you highlight it, and you have a little bar that pops up and all that. Okay. But the big thing about ASStory that is so good is the note section. So there's a couple things you can do with that, but one of the things I use it for a lot is, so I'll be on a website or on an article, and I really like something that Dan Norris says, and I'm like, oh, I gotta use this, and so I can highlight it. And there's Google Chrome extension they have, and you can put it right into your ASStory as a little note, and then when you go back to your story, and you can write the line, and as Dan Norris says, have a little space and drag that in there. It's really cool.
I just directly write in the WordPress editor, though I prefer writing in HTML mode rather than the visual mode. So all good. Let's go a little deeper. Which is your recommended web hosting service? I know the answer, but I still want to know it.
Well, I've been using SiteGround for a few years now, and everything's been pretty good. I usually get almost probably 99% of the time, I'd like to chat whenever I have a problem. I don't like getting on the phone.
Yeah, the chat support is really good.
The chat support is really good. They usually, almost always, they take care of me pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Now, I remember one time I had an issue with a client site, and I was in 30 miles away, and I got on the phone, and I told them what was going on, and took care of it for me while I was on the phone. It was like concierge service. Yeah. And they're always pretty cool.
Yeah. It's my third year with SiteGround. I renewed it for 2 years instead of one.
They just released a plugin or something to help you migrate from.
They have a migrator plugin host, like WP Engine also has it. So next would be what is your favorite website builder? I know the answer, but again.
Well, I wrote an article about all that. 30 some odd page builders. My preferred one is
So which one gets the crown from Todd?
I'm sure Robbie's excited though. Beaver Builder is the one I use. I haven't had a whole lot of work with Elementor. I know some really good people who like it, so
yeah,
I feel like it's probably a good product.
Yeah, Elementor is good. It has its own advantages, but then again, when you are deep into one particular tool that you don't that works for you, you don't want to come out and, you know, get into another. That's normal.
Not unless they started deceiving people or making the product worse, would somebody switch away from them. I think they own that. But I mean, there's some really other good ones. When I did that article, I came across some that were strictly free in the repository. They're actually pretty good. And I know Ivica likes MotoPress, and it looked pretty good. I didn't have a chance to play with it too much. I have used Site of Origin before. I like how that works. As long as it's not Visual Composer or that other one we won't name.
I didn't even name Visual Composer. Just you said it.
Visual will be up. There's another one, but I don't want to mention them because they probably hit somebody listening who likes them, so I'll not mention the other one. But Visual Composer, with Visual Composer is they bake them into these themes, and then they tell you, oh, your theme can do this, this, this. Well, it can't do those without Visual Composer, and Visual Composer is not a very efficient way of doing things. I would probably choose the other one before I would Visual Composer. anyway.
But then the bottom line is, it doesn't matter whether you use Elementor or Beaver Builder. The bottom line is you need to know how to use them properly. Like, I see a lot of people who use either Beaver Builder or Elementor. They do very basic mistake. Like, they will put all kinds of headline module, but they will forget putting one H1 module. Like, you got to get the structure up. Because even though page builders have made things easier for a lot of people to, you know, build pages, they most of them don't have this knowledge of doing the structure of a page the right way in terms of headlines or how the content should be structured. That is a big pain point. Like, a lot of people do it right way, but a lot of people do the wrong way also. So let's stop the Beaver Builder or Builder talk, because this we can go forever. The next very important part is, which is your recommended email marketing service?
You know, I've used Mailchimp for years, not because it's necessarily the best one. I've learned how to use it a lot, and I just worked with a girl in content creators group, Chrissy okay. Dodds, I think's her name, and she has told me she did some technical consulting with Mailchimp, and I was like, huh, I never thought about doing that. I'm sure I know more than most people. Mailchimp. That's pretty interesting that she offers that. I don't think it's something she like publicizes. Here I am publicizing it more.
No, anyway. A lot of agents. I see a lot of agencies who offer Mailchimp setup as a premium add-on. Now, this may look little, what's there to set up, but then you know it. Just because you know it doesn't mean everyone else knows it. So besides Mailchimp, even I am a Mailchimp user, but I'm thinking of trying Seva, which is like ConvertKit.
Yeah.
Probably when they get their Seva thing rolled out in a full blown manner, they're still transitioning to it. So let's see how it goes, because there are a lot of options, but then you got to learn the tool again. And with me, I've been using Mailchimp for a lot of years now, and I find it very comfortable because I've been using it for a lot of years. But if someone new is going to use Mailchimp, even he or she will find it hard to use it, because there are a lot of things you need to learn even to use something as simple as Mailchimp.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be quite as intuitive, especially for a newer person. Mm-hmm. I totally get that. What is intuitive is the price tag when you don't have more than 2,000
exactly.
Subscribers. But and all these, I've been inside Constant Contact and another one for other people, but I didn't like it better than Mailchimp. So,
okay.
But ConvertKit looks good from what I can tell, and would be one I would be. I think ActiveCampaign looks good,
and
I think even
Drip looks good. So all three looks good. But then there are other things like ActiveCampaign is there, and there's a lot of people use Infusionsoft, which I never went in my head the right way. I don't know why. But okay,
ActiveCampaign seems to be more of an automation system than the others do, and the price tag is lower than Infusionsoft and some of the other automation systems. So I think that's one reason a lot of people use that one.
So besides MailChimp, what are other marketing tools in your toolbox that you use for your own personal brand promotion and websites?
You know, I think a lot of people want to use landing page builders, and I use Lead Pages for a long time. It's a good product, and you can connect. But especially if you're an agency and you're already using Beaver Builder, Elementor, or something like that, you can build landing pages pretty quickly and easy with that. If you're a WordPress agency and unless you just want to use lead pages or ClickFunnels or something like that, I don't think you need to, because you have all the tools in the WordPress ecosystem for that. I mean, Beaver Funnels, they can do, you can set up a funnel pretty quickly using that. And he's always doing a Facebook Live and show you how to do stuff. Michael's really nice, and he's very, he's very responsive. I would think that would be a good tool to use. For me, though, it's pretty much what I use for the content, those five tools, MailChimp, WordPress, and Beaver Builder. And I use Zastr as my base theme pretty much these days. And I guess the CRM I use is Salesflare. I'm not using it like I should, but I do have names and stuff in there. Mm-hmm. I use Better Proposals to do the proposal software. Okay. I'm looking really hard at Client Portal because they have right now, they have the
offer came out today only.
Yeah. Today only? That was yesterday. But anyway, I'm looking at that as well because the price tag's really small for a lifetime. So that's what happened with the Salesflare. I got it for a lifetime. So, and Better Proposal. I got both of those through AppSumo. And so I'm thinking about adding that because I think she told me, and I talked to her on Twitter, she's supposed to be getting me this names of some copywriters who use theirs. But I think it's something that'll be intuitive for my clients to use. And it's something I'm thinking about just doing. I'm building a dashboard of some kind on one of my domains that handles CRM and client and everything. And just, I don't know. I might need a designer for that. I don't know. But just a separate dashboard, maybe Client Portal. Maybe I can put it all together and just make it easier, Okay. I like Trello for organizing myself a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And marketing, I guess.
Okay, let's talk lighter side of Todd. What is your happy spot in the online and offline world?
Spend too much time on Facebook, don't we all? I refer to Facebook as my water cooler.
Now that covers the online part. What about the offline world?
That's all you're going to go with, huh? Well, I can spend hours watching YouTube videos sometimes. I know that you're always sending me.
Me too.
Yeah, so sometimes my results in YouTube get skewed, and they're showing me suggestions of some Indian songs and stuff. I'm like, well, I've been watching too many of the things that Devinder sends me. But I like to watch old videos. It's just kind of reminiscent of when I was a kid, I like to watch, I can laugh for hours at blooper videos, or especially the journalist ones. Those are hilarious because I kind of feel for them. You're out doing a live shoot and, something funky happens. And, offline, I guess being at home or doing something, I run Conway Scene, which is a lifestyle blog, and I think that kind of helps me with my social setting in Conway. You go to an event or something like that, and you're kind of there with the hat on of Conway Scene, but it's a chance to have fun, I have a coffee shop I like to go to. I mean, we have three in town, but one in particular I go to a lot called Round Mountain. But I've worked there and Blue Cell both a lot over the years. And they're both fun to go to, but I meet people there a lot of times. somebody wants to meet for coffee, that's usually where we go to one of those places. And so, you know, there's stuff to do around here, thankfully. I like my cat. Purring is one of the best sounds in the world, in my opinion. So.
But what's a cat's name?
We inherited this cat. She was our neighbor's cat, and the name he had for her was Princess. So officially that's her name, but when I first met her, I called her Chopper because she's got a white chin with a little black patch on her chopper. So I call her Chopper.
Okay, are you an early morning person or a late nighter?
Yeah. When I was younger, I was definitely a morning person. In fact, I had a job once where I had to go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning.
So you're not young anymore, right?
I'm not young anymore. health deteriorates over years. And so I don't pop up as early as I used to, but I still get up at a decent hour. I can't sleep too late. But sometimes, especially if I'm, you know, got the energy, I can go later. But usually my body shuts down 10, 11 o'clock. I can't do any more. So I don't know how to answer that, really. I mean.
Okay. Lastly, any happy advice or tips for online people like us who spend a lot of time in front of computer screens?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because we need to be happy, right?
Well, you know, balanced. You know, happy is
subjective,
kind of waxes and wanes with what's going on in your life. I think joy is probably a more sustainable word. But, you know, I started writing an article on self-care, which will either be out tomorrow or sometime later for Main WP. And, you know, that kind of came up with a friend of ours who lost another loved one. And I think we have to check on each other, you know. We have to find our community, whether it's online or I think you should have an online community, but you should also have a local community, right?
And I was surprised, Jason asked yesterday, are you okay? I really liked that post. He was just asking people in his community, are you okay? Does someone wants to talk to me?
And he told me later in a direct message, he had had a lot of people to check, you know, to direct message him. And, you know, it's something that he's passionate about, and it kind of prompted my idea for the post and about self-care. And I'm going to have a lot of things in there about things you can do. But, you know, I think being online, and I guess this is probably the most crucial thing, is I'm talking to you through my monitor here. I'm looking at you, but I can't reach out and touch you. You're in India. You're 14 hours away or whatever. I might meet you someday. I don't know.
Yeah.
But meet people in real life in your town. You know, if you've got another freelancer or entrepreneur group in town, be involved with that group. You know, none of them may be your customers, but you still need the camaraderie. Like Thursday morning this week is what we call geek breakfast. It's just a bunch of us. We call ourselves geeks, but you know, one guy's a computer science professor, and you know, a friend of mine has come, and she has an English degree. I mean, people from all walks of life. We all just skew a little geeky and a little nerdy, and we get together and we eat breakfast at one of the country locations, if you will. And I'm going to go tomorrow morning and visit with a friend who they moved their office from here to another place and see their new place. And, you know, make some time in your day to meet people in real life. I mean, that's not easy. It's easier said than done, I know. But you can sit there and look at a computer screen all day and work and code, whatever, all day long trying to bang out something. But by God, if you got a family, go visit with your family, hang out with your little girl, hang out with your son, hang out with your wife, hang out with your mom and dad, you know, hang out with your friends. You know, sometimes you have to just schedule it, and that's fine. If you can be a part of a freelancer group in your community, do it. Make friends, because it's easy to be isolated when you work online all the time. And I'm the world's worst at it, you know. I tell the guys at the Round Mountain, I said, I come in here in the morning to get coffee, not necessarily because I need the coffee, but it's just a great way for me to start the day meeting somebody and talking to some of my friends, you know. I may not see them more than 10, 15 minutes, but sometimes, you know, I leave with a smile on my face because, you know, I have talked to my friends. They got me a good cup of coffee. There's other people in there I know. And you know, that's what you have to do, I think, to kind of maintain that balance. And it's not easy. I'm going to have more stuff in the article, and I'm not sure. And this will probably be out way after the article. So if that's the case, you can drop it in the
I'll link it in the show notes, definitely. Well, Todd, thank you so much for sparing some time and having this conversation. It was amazing talking to you, as always.
Always. Absolutely. I hear you. Always amazing talking to you, Devinder.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yes, sir. You too.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.